This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kunnison. American video game retailer GameStop saw its stock rally 1,900% from the start of the year to a peak of $347 on January 27th. At this point, it looks like GameStop mania has fizzled out, and while many made money along the way, with the stock falling 85% since its peak, it could be argued that many have lost money as well, particularly those who jumped on the bandwagon without understanding what was going on. So on the back of this, alongside the proliferation of new retail investors we've seen over the last year, today on Ringgit and Cents, I'd like to focus on the bare minimum we should know before investing. And to help me with this, I'm speaking with fund manager Danny Wong, CEO of Erica Capital. Danny, welcome back to Ringgit and Cents.
Thank you for having me here.
Danny, GameStop mania looks to be over. Looking back at this whole thing, what do you think are two or three key lessons that retail investors should learn from this?
First of all, do not make emotional decisions. This is very important. I also followed this gentleman, a billionaire called Justin Sun. He invested $10 million worth of GameStop towards end of January. And he tweeted that it is time to unite and squeeze out those greedy hedge funds. So apparently, looking at it, it is actually a very emotional decision. He just want to chase away the hedge fund. So, of course, he made mistake. From then to now, I think he almost make a loss of 80% of his 10 million, right? So do not make emotional decision. Do not listen or follow to investment tips of others blindly. And do not speculate on quick gains. This is also another one, that the greed drive the people that to chase after a certain stock, which is no fundamental, you know. Hence, instead, we should make rational decision, study and assess the value of what we buy, invest for longer term, and maintain clear mind and cut up noises. There's just simply too much of noise there. Just filter up and take the relevant information.
So Danny, with that in mind, as an investor or budding investor, it's important to have a minimum standard of criteria before we invest or buy a stock. What do you think are five things every new investor should do or know before buying a stock?
There are more things, but among others, I have a few very key ones. First one, you must understand ourselves and know our limits, our risk tolerance level. Don't overstress ourselves, right? Don't buy something that we don't know. Right? Investing requires time to reward. You know? Again, do not speculate on quick gain. So we must understand ourselves. Secondly, understand what we are investing in. Avoid what we don't understand or we can't understand. You know? Investing is just like buying a piece of ownership in a business. Figure out the value or the future of the company. You know? If you want to, let's say, open a restaurant, or partner with somebody else, you must know the business, right? Similarly to investing, know the management team, know the shareholders, also know the business, whether they got future or not. You know, again, the risks are within our parameter, right? So don't invest something that beyond our reach, right? Insist of margin of safety. I only purchase those securities when their market price is significantly below their intrinsic value. And understand, of course, the market dynamic of risk profile. This is number three, right? Analyze the current valuation level and the various market drivers like the economic growth, the corporate earnings, liquidity in the market, you know, the market risk appetite, regulatory and behavioral changes, and so on and so forth. And the other one is actually important, also monitor our investment post our purchase. You know, after we buy, we must monitor not only the investment, monitor also the value, estimate and calculate the future returns on investment based on realistic assumptions as objective as possible, right? Constantly monitor those assumptions, the market dynamics, the company development, and very important is the value of the stock.
Danny, following up from your point on intrinsic value there, could you explain where a stock gets its value from? Fundamentally, what is the value of a stock?
It's a very difficult question, in fact. Value of a stock. But simply means the value of a company. It represents its ability to generate future cash flow through its earnings or business, right? Or talking about how much cash do I have later, right? So the earnings power can be determined from its assets, can be from its business model, management, or its competitiveness, you know, or competitive advantage, of course, and other economic modes, right? The quantitative measure of what a business worth, we call it intrinsic value.
So when we talk about valuation, there are a lot of metrics out there. Danny, what are some of the main metrics we need to understand?
There are a few common ones, right? Conventionally, for a conventional value investors, will use P/E ratio, you know, price to earnings ratio, dividend yields, or price to book ratio. But some of the growth investors will use like P/E to growth, or price earnings to growth, or price to sales. You know, a more complicated one, we actually use like DCF model or discounted cash flow model, discounted dividend models, and sum of parts for conglomerates, for example. But the most common one is P/E.
Now, Danny, talk to us about the P/E ratio or the price earnings ratio. It's one of the most commonly used metrics when valuing a stock. Why is it so popular as a valuation metric?
Because it is fast to calculate. It is easy to use and easy to understand, right? Simply just use a price divide by earning per share, you know, or it use a total market cap over total net earning of a company, right? But please note that if you use the second method, which is come up to be the same ratio, if there is no new capital issued within the year, right? So usually we use price over earning per share. That's easier. However, there are we must also consider the limitation of this P/E ratio. For example, when calculating P/E ratio, for example, is the EPS, which is the denominator, sustainable? If it's not, the current low P/E ratio may become high in future if the EPS is not sustainable in future. So in other words, determining the appropriate earnings is more important. So this reminds us why we must understand what we are investing in. Therefore, to monitor the earnings in future. So often it is easy to have the metrics on profitability, you know, to measure it, but it is tough to forecast or estimate the future earnings.
All right. So when it comes to valuation, it really does come down to cash flow or potential future earnings, which is part of the reason the P/E ratio is so widely used. Danny, you mentioned EPS earlier, which is earnings per share. Could you quickly explain what that is?
Okay, earning per shares is basically the total net profit after all the expenses and also payment to, let's say, preference share dividends, whatever left behind the net return over the number of shares, weighted number of shares within a year. So earning per share basically just want to track how much this company attribute to in terms of cent, to a dollar of or to the share per share.
Right. Now, Danny, just back to the P/E ratio here. What does the P/E ratio tell us about a company? Let's say the P/E ratio of company ABC is 10 times earnings. What does that tell you, Danny?
A 10 times P/E, meaning that we will take 10 years of earnings to recoup what the price that we pay for. So as simple as that. So you buy a 5 times P/E, you need to wait for 5 years to recoup the capital that you put in to buy the at today's price.
Right. So if I buy Tesla at 1,000 times earnings, it'll take 1,000 years for me to recover the money I paid for the shares. Is that about right?
Theoretically, if the same earnings over the next 1,000 years.
I've been speaking with fund manager Danny Wong, CEO of Erica Capital. Up next, when is a stock expensive and when is it cheap? Keep it here to Ringgit and Sense to find out. Welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with fund manager Danny Wong, CEO of Erica Capital, and we're talking about the bare minimum we should know before investing. Nowadays, Danny, we often hear that stocks are expensive, and this is often based on the PE ratio. So could you tell us then, when is a stock expensive and when is it cheap?
Well, PE ratio, like any other ratio, it can't set in stone that make a stock a buy or it is cheap, right? So for value investors, generally speaking, the lower the PE ratio, the better it is, especially when comparing a matured company with a stable earnings trend with its previous trailing PE or many years of PE to track the trend, or with its peer that with similar earnings pattern. However, the low PE may not be a buy signal to someone which is seeking for a growth stock, right? Because growth investor is interested to find a company with a high growth rates. To growth investor, superior earnings growth more than justifies the high entry cost. So he may not look at forward PE. He may look at other things like forward PE or another valuation metric like PE to growth or price to show sales ratio. So there's no hard and fast rule to say that a low PE is a buy or high PE is a sell or is expensive.
So when we take a look at whether a company is cheap or expensive based on the PE ratio, Danny, it really does depend on things like the company size, the sector it's in, and the average PE of the sector or comparable companies, right? So if a company is currently trading at 10 times earnings, but the average for the industry is 20 times, that would lead me to think that it's undervalued. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, but it must make sure that it's comparable. Typically, we compare the PE of a company with its previous PE. That means if this company were to trade at, for example, all this while 15 times for the past 2-3 years, and this year because of crisis, it dropped to 10 times. So to me, it is actually relatively below its trend or average PE. So I would think it is cheap to buy now. Similarly, if I can compare a company with its industry, where the industry is matured, for example, banking industry, which is a matured industry, where earnings can be relatively stable over the years. Then if a bank actually traded at, let's say, 5 times versus the other bank traded at 10 times, I would deem this company generally is cheaper than the others.
All right, but that's premised on the expectation that the company will recover over time, right?
Yes, that's right. The earnings must be stable and recover over time, yes.
All right, Danny, let's shift gears a bit. What do you or other investors watch out for with companies that are loss-making?
Again, we must know what we are investing in. If it's something that is actually a loss-making and there's no light under the over the tunnel, I think forget about it. <You're a> loss-making company. But we look at this, of course, the company and the growth potential and scalability of the business, right? And ask ourselves whether would it turn profitable. And the next question is when. So if it's actually can turn profitable and when, basically we look at the quantitative, because we don't have profit yet, so we look at the qualitative attributes of a company. The qualitative attributes of a company that generates the quantitative in future, right? So we look at, for example, the product or the service that has real demand in the market. We look at, for example, the business market size. How big is the market for this company to go? Look at the management team, very important. Look at economic modes, for example. Can they adapt change? Can they do very innovative way? Do they have a competitive advantage by itself that is actually stop other people from coming in so that they can maintain the market size, for instance. Right, so these are all things that we look at for a current loss-making company that they will turn into profitable and it will turn maybe within 1-2 years or 3 years. So other metrics we would use like price to sales ratio.
Now, when we talk about loss-making companies and the path to profitability, one of the companies that often comes to mind for me is Uber. It's a $100 billion company, and every time an earnings call comes around, there's always a focus on the path to profitability. And while investors believe in revenue and market growth and all of that, that all doesn't really mean anything unless it can achieve consistent profitability one day. So, Danny, when we take a look at these big, promising, hyped-up companies that haven't achieved earnings yet, what are some of the red flags that you're watching out for?
Typically, I think we see many software or tech company or super apps company would have this kind of situation where currently they are still not able to generate profits. But a lot of people believe that the model or the market eventually will drive them to make some profit in futures. That's why there is this term called growth stock, right? So usually we will actually monitor their revenue growth, which is a sales, right? With the sales growth or revenue growth, it will eventually bring the companies to break even and generate more profit when they achieve a so-called economy of scale, and then the profit will come and cash flow will come. So this is something that we monitor. But the red flag will be the moment they're stagnant on the revenue or sales. That one it may not bring them into profitability unless they can scale down the cost and make the margin higher, and then they will make profit again. So these are the few elements we must monitor. And the moment there is something in between happen and against our assumption, then it will be a red flag to sell.
And Danny, when we talk about margins there, that's essentially the difference between revenue generated and the cost of sales, right?
Yes. That's a margin that we say. So it's the revenue minus the costs.
And another thing, I want to quickly touch on the price to sales ratio, which we've mentioned a few times. Now, this is similar to the PE ratio, but using sales numbers instead of earnings. How do you use it when you look at different companies in the world right now?
All right. I think following the general accounting, one must report all the so-called sales as revenue. So the revenue to a company is very important before they talk about cost. So they spend a lot of money on the cost to generate this revenue. Or they could have buying some assets to generate revenue, or they can spend some marketing costs, you know, to generate this revenue. So price to sales is important to judge a growth of a company in terms of their top lines. The red flag will be, are they able to grow the sales or revenue within investors' expectation. Again, the sales that matter, that means to capture the market, to increase the market shares, to really innovate some other new product and services so that to increase the revenue. But the moment the company cannot break through this, then it's a red flag.
So with everything we've discussed so far, Danny, in your view, what are the keys to building our own investing strategy?
All right, we are talking about investing strategies. I think there's no so-called one-size-fits-all kind of things. So start by knowing your investment objective, you know, and your risk tolerance level. As always say that, if there's the word KYC, which is know your client, but in our context here, it's actually know our risk appetite, you know, KORA. Must have proper asset allocation or strategic asset allocation. The moment you spread all your risk, then you look at the stock itself, which is one of the elements of asset in the asset class. So know your own strength and weakness. You are good at macroeconomy, or you're good at starting individual business, or if you're neither, maybe you should avoid investing in stock, but you invest, for example, in ETFs or invest in unit trust, for example. So know your personality, behavioral blunders, and biasness. There's no one-size-fits-all strategy. Look for an approach that is more suitable for ourselves.
And Danny, last thing here. What do you think is the biggest misconception about investing and wealth building?
I think the biggest misconception is that you need to take high risk to make high profit or high return. So usually you heard about this high risk, high return. That's what the textbook teaches us, right? But in reality, high risk often leads to high loss, right? If you make loss, it takes double the effort to regain your capital. So consistent and reasonable return compounding over time usually works better for an average investor in wealth building, especially for retail investor, right? So don't go for high risk high return, even though you say I am a high risk taker, but do remember that the moment you make loss, you have to make doubly, you know, hard to regain what you have lost before talk about gain. So do remind that not every time take high risk for high return, not necessary, you know.
All right, Danny, on that note, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me here.
I've been speaking with fund manager Danny Wong, CEO of Erica Capital. And remember that with all possible investments, you have to do your own homework into the asset, keeping your risk profile and financial goals in mind. You've been listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.